Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Tuesday to you. Hope you're having a good day.
I am. I'm having an awesome day. I'm having a pretty good life, actually.
This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, look at that coastline. Beautiful day in SoCal. You see our beaches? And yes, I'm going to leave that beautiful coastline to go to Buffalo on April 11th. And I can't wait. There is a tour stop. If you want tickets, go to jimworld.com. JimRomeWorldTour.com. You have to use the password until Friday. Basically, it's an invite only until then, and then the general public can jump in. Take advantage of it. Quickly, let me get you some emails. I've got back-to-back interviews coming up this hour. Chris Mannix will join me next segment. Pete Prisco joins me after that. Open phones in hour number three and the beef segment. My thoughts on Joe Burrow and his small hands coming up momentarily. This email says, Jim Wilder wants to get that bad taste out of his mouth. The most effective palate cleanser is a cup of room temperature water, equal parts lemon and cucumber. Signed, Recipe Guy. Drew in West LA. Hey, Drew, it's figure of speech. He doesn't have literally a bad taste in his mouth. Unless it was because he kept getting punched in the mouth. Hey, Rome, I am definitely not exercising the rematch clause. C-L-A-W-S. Rematch clause. Signed, Roy Horn. Signed, Mitch from Buffalo. Sending it. Siegfried and Roy. That's funny, dude. Hey, Mitch, just keep sending it. Hey, Jim. Are people with over a 70 IQ and weighing less than 300 pounds welcome to attend the Buffalo Tour Stop, or is it only open to locals? Denlusks, are you calling Buffalo dumb and fat? That's how that reads. Dumb. Denlusks. Everybody is open to attend if they buy a ticket. Rome Slice. It's Fat Tuesday. Tell Alvin to sound the freaking alarm. Announcement. It is our battle cry.
Fat? Are you? Is anybody not fat?
Fat. He signed it. Charlie Thighs. Dane Cookie Monster. Steven Egg Roll. Haley Roll Condiment. Russell Croatmeal Cream Pie. Storming the Golden Corral Buffet and leaving no steam tray unturned. Geoff. War Carson Daily Katessen. Drinking directly from the chocolate fountain while saying, it's Tuesday somewhere.
Fat Tuesday!
Hey, Geoff, are you shredded? You walking around like 5% body fat? You sure sound like it, and I know you're not. And here's one more. Hey, Rome, happy Fat Tuesday. Fat. Signed, Benny in Frisco Burger, Mikey de la Creme Brulee, Rick in Gut Hanglow, Adam Hawk Sauce, Mike D for three helpings, Salami in NC, Rex in Alfalfa Kirky, Leff in Lasagna, Rick in Calories, Polly in Indigestion, Mark in Most Chins, and Alvin Del Oreos. Mitch from Truffalo, where content is wings. Are y'all done? You had your fun with Fat Tuesday. Let me ask you this. Are you having fun? Are you all having fun? I'm not. I was, but I'm not anymore. Because you're trying to wreck my show, and you're trying to take food off my plate on Fat Tuesday. I'm not having it. Give me back my talk show.
Give me back my shot!
In fact, I'm not going to tell you to give it back to me. I'm just going to rip it back. My show, my takes. More of me, less of you. So the NFL Combine is underway, and it is the very definition of the silly season. You know, the time of year where so-called experts ditch the game tape, and they focus on measuring tape. And there is no better example of that than the hand size measurements of quarterbacks. The annual time of year when guys get their hands measured and then everybody loses their mind over the results happens every single year. Every combine has one. This year, it's Joe Burrow. His hands came in at 9 inches.
No!
Hey, Alvin, do you have a small hand alert?
Tiny
sound
hands.
It.
Tiny hands.
Sound the small
tiny
hand
hands.
Alert.
Tiny hands.
Because Joe Burrow's tiny career hands. Is over.
Tiny hands.
Good job. Hands. It's over. Now, Alvin, you've got to hand it to that so-called crew of experts, because just like clockwork, as soon as the measurement got out, people started questioning whether or not Burrow could get a grip on the NFL with his doll-sized hands. Did you know that only a handful of players with hands 9 inches or smaller have been drafted in the first round? Fact, that is a tiny handful of guys with tiny hands. Yes, apparently 9-inch mitts are smaller than some experts want to see. So they freaked out. And why not, right? If you want to be a great quarterback, you have to have enormous meat hooks, allegedly. Argument goes that if you have small hands, you're going to fumble the ball, especially in the elements. I mean, there is science. That's just science. Well, maybe not science. But definitely conjecture and hearsay. But this crew is never going to let the facts get in the way of a good freak out. And there is lots to freak out about. I mean, you could look at the season that Burrow just had. You know, the one where he threw for over 5,600 yards, 60 bleeping touchdowns, and only 6 INTs, and he completed more than 76% of his passes. You could look at that. Or you could look at the tape measure. You could break tape on a guy who just put together what I would argue is the greatest single season that a quarterback has ever had in the history of college football. You could look at that, or you could just break out a ruler. Joe Burrow himself recognized the severity of what that hand measurement meant, and he took right to Twitter. Quote, considering retirement, after I was informed that the football will be slipping out of my tiny hands, please keep me in your thoughts, end quote.
Tiny hands. Tiny hands.
Condolences, Joe.
Tiny hands.
I'm really sorry, Joe, for your loss. The loss of your career before it even started. Man, that guy nailed that with that tweet. Nailed it. In other words, he's not freaking out, and he's clowning you if you are. And by the way, nobody should be freaking out. Patrick Mahomes is another alleged member of
Mahomes?
Tiny Hands? Mahomes? Tiny Hands Club? Yeah, I don't know. Mahomes is a member of that club. He's in that frat. He seems to be doing okay. He retweeted Burrow's tweet with, quote, my small hands are doing all right so far. I believe in you, end quote. And that's exactly the thing.
Mahomes?
Allegedly had small hands. But those so-called small hands are still big enough to hold an MVP trophy and a Super Bowl trophy in his first 3 years in the league. Except all these so-called scientists will point to Brett Favre as evidence of what they're talking about. They'll say, look at the old slinger. My man had enormous paws, and look how awesome a player he was. Fine. Great. I would point to the slinger and remind everybody that this guy fumbled as much as anybody. Fact. And as Burrow's quarterback guru, Jordan Palmer, said on this show yesterday, the hand size measurement really is a bit of a joke.
The problem is that we've seen some guys, Jared Goff's got 9-inch hands and like $125 million and a couple of Pro Bowls and a Super Bowl appearance. So the problem is there's just been guys that have small hands that have played well, and there's guys with big hands that can't play. So it's not a 100% foolproof thing. It's kind of like height for me. Like, do I want him to be 6'3", 6'4"? Sure. Would I take Drew Brees first overall if I knew what was coming? Yes. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. What I tried to do to dispel that is I've got a little thing where I measure guys' grip strength because I kind of want to dispel that. And it's too early for me to release what everybody's are, but I've been measuring every quarterback I've been around's grip strength, and his grip strength is up there with the strongest. So I don't know if that matters either, but I just look at Joe and I go, look, this guy's the first pick in the draft. You know, 9-inch hands, do I wish they were 10.5? Sure. But I just don't think it's enough to concern me outside of just something to talk about on a Monday.
Right. It's a joke. It's comedy. The last time, this time, last year, people were also losing their minds over Kyler Murray's hands and the fact that he had the smallest set of any quarterback taken in the first round. And again, what's the concern about small hands? Fumbling. They're going to fumble the ball. And then Kyler Murray goes out and he has the lowest fumble rate of any rookie quarterback. So I guess what I'm saying is you're a dope if you freak out about hand size. If Cincinnati were to decide to pass on Joe Burrow because of his hand size, that'd be their call. But that would be one of the worst calls ever. Especially since Burrow finally made it clear this morning that, contrary to all the speculation, he would be very happy to be drafted by the Bengals, and he'd be very happy to live and work and play there.
Yeah, I'm not going to not play. I'm a ball player. Whoever picks me, I'm going to go show up.
So much for the argument that he was going to try to force his way out of Cincinnati to a different team. He made it very clear he has no intention of sinking his draft stock to avoid the Bengals.
Yeah, of course I want to be the first pick. You know, that's every kid's dream. You know, I've worked really, really hard for this opportunity, and I'm blessed to be in this position, and a lot of people helped me get here. So I'm just really excited to be in this place.
Not exactly. Oh, no. If I were Cincinnati, I would never take me. I have like 3-inch hands. Don't take me. This guy's held the last 24 hours like a boss, clearly mocking the hand measurement on Twitter, cleverly doing so, then showing up well with the media today. It'd be impossible to see how he's done all that and the tape that he has, not the measuring tape, but the actual tape, and think, yeah, nah, I don't want this guy as my quarterback, especially with those miniature hands. Like, if you see that guy and that's your take, you're just looking for a reason not to like that guy. And at this point, you'd have to look really, really hard and probably even make some stuff up. And as for that reference, in the past him saying that he had, quote, leverage in the process, he explained that he didn't mean that he had leverage in the draft. He meant that he had leverage in the combine.
I was kind of talking more about the combine process. So just so everyone knows, I'm not going to throw. I'm not going to work out. So that's kind of what I was talking about. But, yeah, I'm going to try to be the best player I can be for whoever drafts me and try to fit in any way that I can.
You know, we talk about this every single year at this time, and I always hear the same exact responses. Look, now that we've moved on from complaining about his hand size and whether he'll play in Cincinnati, save your unnecessary freakouts also for the fact that he's not going to throw at the combine or work out. And you can come with your great takes about how, yeah, well, that shows he's not a true competitor. He's not a real warrior because a real competitor would throw and work out in Indy. It must mean he's got something to hide. It must mean that he's not a leader or a franchise quarterback. And, of course, that would be an all-time terrible take once again. He doesn't have to throw at the combine. So why would he throw at the combine? What does he get out of that? What does he have to gain? Nothing. If your take is he should throw at the combine and that if he doesn't, that makes him a coward, that says more about you than it says about him. He's right. He does have leverage. He can dictate the terms. He could go between now and the draft without picking up a football with his tiny hands and still go first. So why the hell should he throw when he doesn't have to? He's got the hammer. He'd be a fool not to swing it. Just like it would be stupid to take anything that's happened in the last 24 hours involving this guy and use it against him. If you didn't already know before, he's underlined that he's got what it takes to be a franchise quarterback. So what I'm saying is, you really got to hand it to Burrow because he's handled everything so well in the last day. Give the guy a hand. Man, the combine is officially upon us. Hand questions today, lack of bench reps tomorrow, idiots asking players about their mom's professions on Thursday, and leaked Wonderlic scores by the weekend. Welcome to Indy, Dave Craig. Joe Burrow. When we come back, Chris Mannix joins us. Pete Prisco right after that. Then to hour number three, and we beef. Hey, look around you. It's a wireless world. Everybody needs an awesome pair of wireless earbuds. Go with Raycons. Raycons start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. And they sound just as amazing as the other top audio brands that you know of. Raycon's latest model, the E25s, are their best ones yet. You get 6 hours of playtime, you get seamless Bluetooth pairing, you get more bass, you get a more compact design that gives you a comfortable, noise-isolating fit. And unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet. No dangling wires, no stems. Perfect for on-the-go listening and for doing business and taking telephone calls. Raycon was co-founded by Ray J. Celebrities like Cardi B and Snoop Dogg have already given Raycons their seal of approval. Now it is your turn to see what the hype's all about. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Rome. Again, buyraycon.com/Rome for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Check them out. The price is already great. And now you get 15% off by going to Raycon, actually buyraycon.com/Rome. buyraycon.com/Rome.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. All right, as promised, we are joined right now by a senior writer for SI, Sports Illustrated, NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, boxing analyst for DAZN, host of the Crossover NBA Show podcast, host of the SI Boxing Podcast with Chris Mannix. Mikey Garcia versus Jesse Vargas is Saturday night on DAZN. And obviously a very good friend of the program, he is Chris Mannix. My man, you are busy. Chris, what's up? How are you?
What's going on, Jim? Just got in from Southern California just a couple hours ago, so I'm good.
Good. Well, I know you were here for the celebration of the lives of Kobe and Gigi. What did you make of that yesterday?
I mean, really powerful. And you expected it to be, but, you know, sitting there kind of listening to everything, you really learn a lot of things you didn't know. I mean, I didn't know, and a lot of people I talked to didn't know, the depth of the relationship between Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Rob Pelinka, who told a really powerful story about him texting Kobe from the helicopter about somebody on it, you know, moments before it went down, was really, really moving. And, you know, hearing Vanessa Bryant, you know, speak just weeks after the loss of her husband and daughter in such a fairly eloquent way was really something. So it was well done. You knew it was going to be, but it was really, really well done.
I really agree with everything you just said. Chris Mannix joining us. So, Chris, how would you go about trying to sum up Kobe's impact on the league and on the Lakers in particular, if you had to?
You know, it's hard because it's a complicated, just keeping it on basketball because we know everything else has to be factored in as well, but it's a complicated basketball legacy too. I mean, you know, you put it in a vacuum and you say Kobe Bryant played 20 years for the Lakers. Well, I mean, he was lucky to play 20 years for the Lakers. I mean, the times he had trade demands and the battles with Shaq, I mean, it wasn't a stretch to think that there were multiple occasions that Kobe could have been playing for somebody else, whether it was the Bulls or the Clippers or other teams that he had flirted with. But, you know, I look at his legacy kind of two ways, the impact two ways. One, he did, you know, kind of seize that mantle as the it player in the NBA after it was kind of being passed around for a few years post-Jordan. It was Duncan, then it was Iverson. It kind of sifted all over the place. Kobe kind of grabbed it in the early 2000s and became the face of the NBA when the NBA needed it. I'd also say I think he ranks up there, Jim, as one of the most impactful international players, you know, ever, not just because of the gold medals that he won, but, you know, the Dream Team opened that door for international players to watch American basketball and watch the NBA and start playing the game. when they were watching, Kobe Bryant. I mean, they watched him in the late 1990s, early 2000s, and, you know, he's as responsible as anyone for, you know, the growth of all those young players who eventually turned into, you know, great NBA players.
Chris Mannix is joining us. All right, Chris, let me shift gears now. You were in Vegas on Saturday night for Wilder Fury 2. I mean, there were so many different ways that fight could have gone, but did you ever imagine Fury dominating pretty much every second from the opening bell, dropping Deontay Wilder twice, and then ending that fight the way he did in the seventh?
No, I really couldn't have, because I mean, I've seen a lot of Tyson Fury in recent years, dating back to, you know, being on the broadcast team for his first fight in the U.S. in 2013. When he wins, oftentimes he wins ugly. And I hearken back to the win over Vladimir Klitschko several years ago, where he just kind of mucked it up, used head movement, and flummoxed Klitschko, who has some similar traits to Deontay Wilder, has that kind of big right hand that Fury was trying to stay away from. But look, there was clearly something that Fury learned in that first fight about Deontay Wilder that he implemented. And one thing about Fury is that he is an incredibly intelligent boxer. He's been at this since he was at a very young age, 7 years old when he first started boxing. And, you know, he read something in Wilder, and whatever he saw, you know, really gave him the confidence to take it to Wilder and put himself in harm's way like that. And it was a wildly successful strategy. I mean, you know, I don't think, I mean, I was scoring that fight from ringside and watching it. I didn't give Wilder one round, and you'd be hard pressed to find, you know, too many, you know, consequential sequences for Deontay Wilder. That's just because Fury just had such a brilliant game plan and took the fight right to him.
No, I agree. I had it on pay-per-view. I did not give him a single round either. Now, Fury, though, I mean, he might be a little unorthodox, and he might win ugly at times, but this is not some one-punch wonder who got lucky one night in Vegas, right? He had a really nice amateur career. He's had some big professional wins. But then, Chris, he hit rock bottom. How improbable is everything that he's done, and how do you explain the way he was able to turn it around the way he has?
So he is one of the great boxing success stories. I mean, right up there with, like, you know, Jimmy Braddock and Cinderella Man, and, you know, Muhammad Ali coming back from purgatory and what he went through during early in his career. I mean, for Fury, you know, he had some serious mental health issues, and, you know, in the aftermath of the Vladimir Klitschko win, and I've talked to him extensively about this, he kind of felt like he had accomplished everything he set out to accomplish and didn't know where to go from there. You know, he wasn't motivated to get back in the gym and train for a rematch against Vladimir Klitschko. And he just hit, as you said, kind of rock bottom in his life. And, you know, the ability to kind of pull himself out from that, I mean, you have to give him an enormous amount of credit for it. You have to give Ben Davison, who was not in his corner for this last fight, but trained him in the three prior, an incredible amount of credit for it. But overall, it just is. It just really is one of the best stories that boxing's seen. And it's, as you know, boxing is full of great stories all the time. But Fury's ability to go from, you know, kind of this 400-pound, you know, out of boxing, no chance type of guy to, you know, the number one heavyweight in the world, really is remarkable.
Well, to coke abusing, suicidal 400-pound somebody. I mean, it is absolutely astonishing what he did, but even more so when you consider where he came from. Chris Mannix joining us. So, Chris, what do you make of Deontay saying that he didn't have his legs in the fight? Nobody would dispute that, right? We could all see it. What we didn't know was apparently it was because his outfit to the walk up to the ring was too heavy. What do you make of that comment, and do you buy that?
Well, no, I don't. And, you know, I like Deontay a lot. Everyone's ever encountered him does, but he's got to stop talking. I mean, he's basically playing the blame game bingo over here, where it's like it's the outfit, and then it's Mark Breland and Anthony Durrell yelling at ringside, and the referee stunk. I mean, it's just every interview he does, he blames somebody else. So I think he's just got to stop and maybe even take a page out of Anthony Joshua's book. I mean, Joshua, when he lost to Andy Ruiz, you know, didn't make any excuses, gave all the credit to Ruiz, and then said, I'm going to come back and I'm going to win these titles once again. I think that's kind of what Wilder has to do. I mean, fine, the outfit he wore might have been heavy, but that didn't change the outcome of the fight. Tyson Fury changed that fight. Him coming at Deontay Wilder fearlessly in ways that Wilder has never had an opponent do before, that changed everything in that fight. So I just, it's kind of in bad taste. I mean, I think he just kind of got to take his lumps and move on and I guess try to win the rematch.
Yeah, I said the same thing. In fact, I think we all do. We all like Deontay. We all like talking to Deontay, but that is bad form. In terms of Mark Breland, Chris, I don't know where you come out. To me, he absolutely did the right thing. But let me ask you this. The other part of the argument from Deontay is he talks about going out on a shield, and that's a principle for him, and he's a gladiator. I get that. But how do you square that? You've been around this game a long time. How do you square that with the corner's responsibility to protect their fighter?
Yeah, the corner shouldn't care what the fighter wants in those situations. I mean, most fighters I've covered and come across would say the same things that Deontay Wilder did. Like, I want to be knocked out. They don't want to see that towel come in and be accused of quitting in those circumstances. If you remember, when Joshua lost, you know, Wilder was pretty critical of him on social media, basically called him a quitter in that fight. And that's one of the first things I thought of when that towel kind of came flying in. But if you're Mark Breland, you can't think about that stuff. And really, the only controversy to me is, you know, why wasn't Jay Deese the one doing it? I mean, I asked Deese this after the fight. I was like, I was trying to understand the mechanics of that corner, because in most corners, you take Freddie Roach, for example. Like, Freddie Roach's assistants don't have the power to throw the towel in that situation. And, you know, Deese made the analogy of how they're kind of run like a football team, and Breland's the offensive coordinator. He has more power than most assistants do. But, you know, Jay Deese seemed perfectly content to say Breland was wrong and that he would have let Wilder go out the way he wanted to go out. That's not the way to do it. Anyone that was watching that fight from really the fifth round on, when I noticed Wilder putting his arm on the ropes to prop himself up, they knew the possibility that him winning that fight with one punch was gone. And Tyson Fury is not this concussive one-punch guy. He's just going to go out there and put a beating on you for 10, 11, 12 rounds. So the only question in this fight was, how long could Wilder stay on his feet taking punch after punch from Tyson Fury? And Mark Breland, who was the only guy in that corner with any boxing experience, he went out there and did the absolute right thing and tossed that towel in. So Fury being upset is one thing, but I still want to know more about the, you know, the dynamic with Jay Deese in that corner, why it wasn't Jay that was the one throwing the towel in.
I think we know, right? Because he didn't want to stop the fight. Now, I want to know why he didn't want to stop the fight. I mean,
yeah.
Was he sucking up to his fighter? Was he trying to preserve his own job? There's no way you can watch that fight, Chris, and think that he had any chance of winning. He was taking so much unnecessary punishment. He's bleeding from his ear. I mean, how could you not see that and think to yourself, we got to get our guy out of there. We have to protect our fighter from himself. Because he...
Look, I couldn't, obviously sitting ringside, I couldn't hear the broadcast or what was being said in the corner, but you could see it, you know, in between the last round and the one before it. I'm looking up at the screen and I'm seeing kind of while they're not responsive to Deese or Breland as he's talking, they're kind of tilting his head up with their hands. And, you know, that body language alone told me this fight was almost over. When Fury landed that big right hand, you knew something needed to be done there, and Breland, you know, did the right thing. I'd hate to see him lose his job over this, and I think it would be a bad move for Deontay Wilder to fight and to fire an accomplished boxer like Mark Breland was, and a very good trainer, over him, you know, trying to preserve the long-term future of the fighter.
I said the same thing. I would hate to see that cost him his job, but if it does, and I'm Mark Breland, I can sleep at night knowing that I did the right thing. He did his job. He's a senior writer for SI, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, boxing analyst for DAZN, Mikey Garcia and Jesse Vargas. Saturday night on DAZN, he is Chris Mannix. Chris, appreciate you, man. Great job. Thank you so much, as always.
Anytime, Jim.
You're the best. Chris Mannix. He is busy. He's doing work. When we come back-to-back, Pete Prisco is next. Combine is upon us. NFL draft right around the corner. We talked to Pete Prisco in hour number 3. All right, you should be lining it up right now. What is your beef? Call me with a beef. Tweet me your beef. Email me your beef. Here is your bottom of the hour sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. My thanks to Chris Mannix, All right, let me change up on you. Let's talk some football. We are joined by a senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com, an analyst on the Pick Six podcast. Also a friend of the program. He is a busy man. He is Pete Prisco. Pete, good to have you back. How are you?
Good, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Pete, first things first, and this is really important. You made the annual February trek to Indianapolis for the Combine, but yesterday you did tweet, and I quote, "Jackass run from back of plane alert." Now, am I correct in thinking, Pete, that somebody was on your flight trying to race up the aisle as soon as the seatbelt sign was off? Is that what you mean?
That's exactly what happened. And everybody who flies knows that guy. As soon as the plane lands, seatbelt off, he goes racing to the front because he's got to get off the plane quicker than everybody else. And I didn't get up in time, but usually I'll stand up and say, "Hey, we're all getting off the plane. Where the hell are you going?"
Jerk move. Such a jerk move. Like, that guy's any more important than the rest of us and has to be somewhere any more than we have to be. I couldn't agree more. Now, you do a lot of traveling. Where do you come out, Pete, on people who recline their seats on planes?
Well, for years, and that one video went viral, but for years I've been that guy that bangs on the back of the seat when they're sitting there. Not to that degree. I use my knees. I'm a little more calculated than that guy. I actually use my knees to bang the tray table until they look behind you. And I've had guys look behind me and they say, "What are you doing?" I said, "Your seat tray is in my face. I'm trying to work here." And ultimately they move it up. Yesterday on the flight up here, this tiny woman was sitting in the seat in front of me and she put it all the way back, so I banged it for the whole ride.
What did she say?
She didn't say one word. I think she was sleeping.
Pete Prisco joining us. All right, one more thing here. You tweeted last week, "Go to this place for lunch today. It's one of those places where they want you to cook your own food on a rock. I go out to pay for cooked food. Pass." Pete, it made me laugh out loud. How did that lunch go for you?
It was a place we were going out after during the work day, and we went to this place, and I'm sitting there, "Okay, let's look at the menu." And you look at something on the menu, it says stone next to it. I'm like, "Okay." I asked the waitress, I said, "What's that mean with stone?" She says, "Well, if you ordered the shrimp, you have to cook them." I said, "Wait, the food comes raw, you cook them on a stone? I'm paying you to cook my food? To my own food? No chance. Not happening."
Pass. All right, now I could spend the entire segment talking about travel and food, but we probably should talk some football. How would you describe the atmosphere in Indy for the Combine, and how much time are you going to be logging at St. Elmo's?
Well, it's different now. They've changed this thing because they have all the events and all the throwing and all the workouts at nighttime now. So it's kind of a little bit different than it's been in years past. There's no question about that. And, you know, this is the biggest convention in the NFL. So you get to get out and go to St. Elmo's and see people and have a few adult beverages. But now it's a little different. It's changed. Some teams, the Rams didn't even send some of their guys here. So it is definitely changing. And it's funny because this thing started, when I first started, we'd go to the hotel and they'd bring players to you out in the lobby. There was probably about 20 people there total, 20 media members. Now you have all these stations and everybody, every team's represented. And, we do live programming on CBS Sports HQ on a regular basis. It's just mushroomed into this big, giant event.
All right, so if it's a big, giant event and the teams aren't sending all their people, but there is this hype and there is this attention, from your perspective, how important is it really, and who is it most important for?
I think it's most important for medicals, first and foremost. That's the number one priority here. Everybody gets, physicals, and they do the MRIs on them, and you can find out if they're healthy or not. I think number two, it's getting to know the player a little bit, even though they're rehearsed and they've been prepped and all their agents hire these people to prep them for these interviews. You do get a chance to get into the room with them and talk to them. And then, see how they are in the media, how they handle that. And then I think fourth, it's the workout. I don't put a lot of credence into the workout. I know, most teams don't either. It can really help a guy if he goes and you've got to go back to the tape and say, "Hey, this guy ran faster than I thought he played. Let me go back and look." That type of thing. But I don't think it's the end-all be-all in terms of a workout.
We're talking to Pete Prisco. Now, Pete, this morning Joe Burrow said that he does want to be the number one pick, that he would play for the Bengals. What do you make of that fit for him in Cincinnati?
Oh, I think it's a great fit. I talked to him off the podium for a little while, and he's got that edge to him which you want from your quarterback. I mean, he's not, a guy that's going to back down from the challenge. He's been involved in a bunch of them over his life, trying to get to where he was last year when he went to LSU. And he said this, when he went to LSU, it wasn't a great program from a football standpoint. And look what it became. So I think he's up for it. I think he's looking forward to it. It's down the road from his home. And they have a good situation for a young quarterback. A.J. Green will be back, whether he hits a new deal or he gets tagged. They had Tyler Boyd's a good number two receiver. If John Ross can ever stay healthy and he can run, he can help them. Then you look at the offensive line. Jonah Williams is coming back to play left tackle. That's like an extra draft pick. And Joe Mixon was phenomenal in the second part of the season last year. It's a good situation for a young quarterback.
Pete Briscoe is in Indy for the Combine. Now, Pete, Chase Young announced that he is not going to work out in Indianapolis. Does that impact how you view him in any way?
Not one bit. Zero. And again, I'm a big tape guy, as are most teams. But I understand a guy wanting to work out at his own facility and be much more comfortable with that. And, you know, certain guys, they're going to go where they're going no matter what. And so why not work out at your own facility and be comfortable with it? No problem whatsoever, Jim.
All right, so one of the inflection points, Pete, in the draft has been Miami and what they do at the fifth pick. You have them taking Tua. If you're Miami or any NFL team for that matter, what do you want to know about Tua and his health before you invest a big pick like that or a high pick like that?
Yeah, I think you want to know if that hip is indeed a problem. And, you know, people will point to the ankle injuries and say that he's, you know, one of those guys that's injury prone. I don't necessarily buy that, but the hip is the major thing. If he can, you know, when's he going to be able to throw? Will he be able to be back to with the same guy before the injury? You know, that's the most important thing. And then for me, I think it's just sitting with the kid and getting an idea for how he is as a player. You know, I want to know if they have the fire in the belly. I always say that. I want my quarterback to be like Joe Burrow and say, hey, you know what, I'm going to go to Cincinnati and change the culture there. I want that type of guy. I don't know if Tua is that guy. He's got to prove that to me.
We're talking to Pete Briscoe. What about Justin Herbert? Is he that guy? As an example, if Tua goes fifth, that means that Justin Herbert's on the board for the Chargers, potentially at number six. Now, I had Anthony Lynn on the show earlier today. Pete, he's really high on Tyrod Taylor. Do you like the idea of bringing in Herbert and letting him learn under a vet for a while?
Yeah, and I think that's what they'll do. I think that's the plan. You let Phillip Rivers walk. You let Tyrod Taylor be the bridge quarterback, and you draft your guy. And I think when you look at it, Justin Herbert makes sense for them. He's a big, athletic, tall quarterback who can throw the football, and he's athletic. I mean, you saw it in the Rose Bowl. He ran all over the place. And teams now love the idea of the quarterback who can move. So for the Chargers, that makes a lot of sense. I don't necessarily believe that the Chargers and Tom Brady make a lot of sense. And the reason I say that is they think they're going to go in there and sell tickets just by signing Tom Brady. They're not. So I just don't see that as being the case. You got to have long-term success to sell tickets, and to have long-term success, you need a franchise quarterback that you draft and develop.
Yeah, I've watched Herbert quite a bit, but I got to admit, when I went to the Rose Bowl, Pete, I was shocked—not shocked, but couldn't be anything but impressed with how much damage he did with his legs and how many plays he made outside the pocket. Now, you had Jacksonville head coach Doug Marrone on with you for CBS Sports HQ earlier today. He said that Jacksonville's plan is to have both quarterbacks this season and to have them compete for the starting job. What do you make of that situation, and how do you expect that to play out?
Well, I think the idea is, really, he wouldn't say it, but I think Minshew goes in as the leader, and they will open it up to a competition. And, you know, look, the one thing that you can't do is, and I asked him this, I said, if you have a competition and he wins it, the kid can't be playing by looking over his shoulder at the, you know, first sign of having problems where you yank him out of there. And he said, no, that's not going to be the case. So I do think that they'll go into camp with Minshew as the guy who takes the first couple of snaps. He wouldn't say that. And then I think that, you know, they'll have a competition. But ultimately, I think they'd love to see Minshew win the job.
Pete, last thought. Emmitt Smith recently suggested that Dak Prescott should take less money so that other teammates can be paid and that Dak could probably make up the rest in endorsements. What do you make of the Hall of Famer going into his wallet?
Well, Emmitt Smith is the same guy who sat out a couple games in a contract dispute. He shouldn't be talking about anybody's money. I mean, that's a clear violation of the rules of the locker room, even though he's not in it. He's still a Dallas Cowboy player. He shouldn't have said that. And no player ever should take less money under any circumstances than what he deserves, because everybody keeps saying, oh, look at Tom Brady. Hey, Tom Brady made that up in other ways. Bottom line is get everything you can when you can, because you know what? They'll cut you quickly if you're not playing up to it.
That really is something, right? I mean, Emmitt sat out to get more, and he's telling Dak to take less. He is a senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com. He is an analyst on the Pick 6 podcast. He is Pete Briscoe. Pete, great to have you back. Thanks so much for doing that.
All right, Jim. Take care.
Have fun. Pete, he's in Indy for the Combine. Pete Briscoe. Emmitt did do that. Emmitt's like, come on, Dak. Take less because it's still enough, and you'll find other ways to make it up, and that way you could surround yourself with more talent and give you a better chance to win. Wait, Emmitt, you sat out games to get more. I tend to go along with Pete. nobody, especially in the NFL, should ever take less than what they can get. NFL, not for long. In hour number three, the beef segment. It's coming. Right now, hit me up on the phones, 1-800-636-8686. What do you got to beef about? You clones always have something to beef about. Sports, non-sports, a person, a thing, your boss, your family, anything at all. Hit me up. That's coming up next.